The court will now call Jerry Hudgens versus Daryl Hallmark. And may it please the court, Mr. Rick Strange to argue for the appellants, Mr. Frank Gilstrap to argue for the appellees.
Morning, may it please the court.
Along
with Sean Rainey, we represent Mr. Hudgens in his capacity as representative for the shareholders of Tesco. This case presents an interesting procedural context because you have a company that was about to be acquired in merger, Tesco. They put together some bonus plans to keep key employees, including Mr. Hallmark. At the end of the year, these key employees received bonus payments under two plans based upon estimated financial numbers. The merger goes forward, the merger is completed, they do an audit, and they find out that those numbers were way off. Not close. The numbers were way off. All the estimated numbers were way off, which meant that the key employees received too much under the bonus. Well, and so now who has the right, if anyone, to seek redress for those excess bonus payments? Much has been made in the briefs, and I know the court has read the briefs and is aware of the issues. Much has been made in the briefs about, well, Mr. Hudgens, is he bringing this individually or in what capacity? I just simply direct the court to the plaintiff's pleadings. Mr. Hallmark filed this suit. And if you look at how Mr. Hallmark filed this suit, he sued Mr. Hudgens as representative for the shareholders. And the reason that that happened is because in the merger agreement that was entered into between Tesco and PLSI, the shareholders were parties. Not parties because they owned stock in Tesco and Tesco entered into the agreement. The shareholders themselves were parties. Mr. Hudgens was the shareholder's representative and signed that contract. Yes, ma'am.
Well, couldn't it be that Mr. Hudgens was, Mr. Hudgens, the 2H name, was sued in that capacity because that was the capacity that he sent the letter out in, basically the demand letter?
Sure, could be. It definitely could be. Obviously, that could have been, but if you look at the nature of the allegations, that established a certain judicial admissions. Amongst those is our capacity. If you look at the way we were sued, I mean, we're entitled to rely upon that. But even if you disregard that, look at the contract. Mr. Hudgens, on behalf of all the shareholders, signed that contract. And so the shareholders as a group have now made contractual promises. They're subject to contractual obligations, and they've acquired certain contractual rights. 99.999 whatever percent of the time when a corporation is involved, it's the corporation that's the contracting parties. Shareholders have some derivative benefit. If I own stock in Exxon and Exxon does well, that's good. If Exxon does poorly, that's bad. But this is that unique situation where it wasn't just Tesco that signed the contract. It was the shareholders. And the shareholders in this instance had, like I said, several contractual obligations. Key in terms of this lawsuit, the shareholders were obligated to make sure that Tesco's books had certain numbers in them, valid numbers, and you would all refer to a capital account. Tesco, at the end of the audit, after all the dust had settled, Tesco's books had to show a certain amount of capital.
Why wasn't this resolved at that point, when everybody knew that there was a shortfall? Why wasn't this issue resolved then?
Well, between those two parties it was, or three parties. Tesco, the shareholders were obligated to...
Right, the shareholders had to eat the difference.
The shareholders had to eat the difference.
Why didn't they stand on their rights at that point?
I may not understand the question. They did stand on their rights. Their rights in terms of Tesco and PLSI are separate from their rights with Mr. Hallmark. They had to...
They knew that Hallmark and others had been overpaid. And by your briefing and your argument, grossly overpaid.
Right.
And so why didn't they, at the time of reconciliation, say there's a problem with these books, King's X, let's get this resolved before we go forward and finish up the final stages of that merger?
They didn't have that right. At that point, their obligation to PLSI was to deliver the keys to an asset with certain credentials and certain numbers. They couldn't have said to PLSI, time out, we need to go fix this. PSI just would have looked at him and said, you know, that's your problem. You promised us a company with X dollars in the capital account, and that's what they did.
Well, if they didn't have that right then, how did they accrue that right later on?
They accrued that right when they made Tesco whole. Tesco's capital account was short, and so the shareholders funded that difference. That brought the capital account into balance with what they were required to do with PSI. Once they did that, once they paid Tesco's obligations, they stepped into Tesco's shoes. If this hadn't been a merger situation, if this had just been an ordinary company with an employee benefit plan and the employees were paid incorrectly, the shareholders wouldn't have had a claim. That would be between the company and the employees. The shareholders would be interested by parties, but the claim would be between the two. In this instance, Tesco's capital account was short. The shareholders made up the difference because they were contractually required to do so. They made Tesco whole. PLSI got exactly what they had contracted for. And once they did that, either by virtue of the contract or through equity, they stepped into Tesco's shoes and they can now bring that claim. But the claim wasn't right until, or their standing hadn't improved until they had made that payment. They wouldn't have made that payment until the closing. So the closing has occurred, they've made Tesco whole, PLSI has gotten what they want, and you now have a right claim.
Against a Tesco employee.
Against a Tesco employee, yes ma'am. That's, like I said, this is, the shareholders have, can now assert a right on behalf of Tesco. Now the overpayment occurs on December 31st at the end of the year, but you don't know it's an overpayment until the audit in connection with the merger. Once the audit is complete and then we've now got all the books and we see, oops, we've got a problem. We've got a problem because your financials are grossly overstated. And why are they grossly overstated? Well, there are several reasons, including the fact that they made payments based on those estimated financial numbers that were incorrect.
But why isn't this dispute controlled by the merger agreement, paragraph 2.20, the post-closing adjustment?
Because those contractual obligations were between the three parties, PLSI, Tesco, and the shareholders. And under that circumstance, the shareholders had to have Tesco in a certain spot to meet their obligations to PLSI, which defined PLSI's obligations.
But paragraph B gives the stockholders' representative the authority to notify the buyer within 20 business days if it wants to dispute the amount of certain things, closing date cash, closing date indebtedness, closing date net working capital. So why isn't this covered within that?
Because there was no dispute about the numbers in the audit. The audit revealed that the projected numbers were wrong. The shareholders, if the audit had said, let me make up numbers, if the audit had said your current assets are $10 million, and the shareholders said, no, our current assets are $12 million, that provision gave them the right to object to the audit. But there was no dispute. Once the audit was complete and the books were restated, there's no dispute. That was right. That was what our capital account was, that was what our cash account was, accounts receivable, all those numbers were right. The discrepancy was between the audit numbers and the projected numbers. And you look back and you go, okay, why were we so far off? Well, that's not PLSI's problem. That's not because what they've contracted for, they've now received. It's, let's go back to December 31st. What was going on? Why are those numbers so far off? Which led to, well, they're so far off, there were a variety of reasons, but one of them is these overpayments to those seven employees. The shareholders have made good on that. The money that was paid to those employees, they've now put back into Tesco so that its financials, its capital account, meets what the merger agreement required. So they stepped into Tesco's shoes. They paid a debt to Tesco, or that Tesco owed. They paid Tesco's debt. They stepped into Tesco's shoes, and they can now seek recovery for those overpayments. But like I said, the audit would only give you rights if you disagree with the numbers, and there was no disagreement. And what's interesting, I know there's a statement in counsel's brief that, well, we deny that Mr. Hallmark was overpaid. If you look at the actual summary judgment evidence, there's no dispute about that. I think we all agree on the numbers. The numbers after the audit were correct. The projected numbers are incorrect. And if the bonuses had been paid based on the audited numbers, they would have been substantially lower than what they were paid based on the estimated numbers.
I'd like to hear what your response is to the release argument, because there was a release.
Yes, ma'am.
In the merger agreement, right. There was a release in the settlement where the shareholders agreed to pay the $450,000 or whatever it was. And then there was another release later on down the road that I don't believe Hudgens actually did sign.
Right. The ones I'm familiar with, in the merger document, there was some very broad mutual release languages between the parties. And what Mr. Hallmark is relying upon is Tesco and the shareholders released PLSI and a variety of people. Those were for claims and cause of action that arose by virtue of the merger. Not some consequence, but by virtue of the merger. And what Tesco and the shareholders said is, hey, PLSI, we release you. Any claim that we might have in connection with this merger, we release you. And all the other people, we release because they're derivative of a claim against you. Your president, your officers, your directors, any claim that we've got that's derivative, we're releasing you. That release does not include any claim against Mr. Hallmark on behalf of Tesco or the shareholders taking Tesco's place.
Why wouldn't it? Because the shareholders wouldn't have had to pay the money in to make up this working capital that wasn't there had it not been for the merger. It would have been a totally different situation, the alleged overpayment, if it weren't for the merger. So it does relate to the merger, doesn't it?
No, ma'am. The claim from Tesco against the employees would have arisen if you've got the same bonus program and you've got payments made on estimated and you find out the estimated numbers are wrong. That claim exists whether there is or isn't a merger. I mean, you can say, well, I had to write this check, but that claim is independent of the merger.
It wouldn't have been, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It wouldn't have been your client's claim. That would be Tesco's claim.
We've stepped into the shoes of Tesco by virtue of the merger, but the claim itself doesn't arise because of the merger. It's not a claim that arises because of the merger, because if there had been no merger, there still would have been a claim. It would have been Tesco's claim, obviously, but there still would have been a claim. The settlement agreement with PLSI is a claim that arises because of the merger. So that this would have arisen if you'd made payments based on estimated financials. And
wouldn't have been your claim but for the merger.
Wouldn't have been my claim but for the merger, but that doesn't mean that the release swallows it. The release only swallows it if it's a claim that arises directly because of the merger, not the standing.
Is that what the agreement says?
Yeah. Doesn't it say anything relating to it whatsoever?
Anything relating to it whatsoever, which means it's a claim that arises because of, and without the merger, you wouldn't have had. In this instance, the merger changes who can assert the claim, but it doesn't change the fact that there was a claim. It has to be a claim, and it's got to be a claim that you could have asserted against PLSI. You can't assert a claim against PLSI. They didn't do anything wrong. They contracted to receive a company with a certain amount in its capital. We had to make that up because of this, but PLSI didn't do anything wrong. There's no way we could have sued PLSI or any of its officers or directors. They weren't making any representations. They were entitled to receive something. Like I said, now the merger affects the standing, who can assert it, but it doesn't go to the nature of whether or not there was a claim to begin with. And therefore that release, you know, a release, because it's not a claim against PLSI, it's not a claim that's derivative against PLSI, it can't reach Mr. Hallmark. The second release that you asked me about was one that he entered into. Mr. Hallmark went to work for PLSI, he entered into a release, and the language of that release refers specifically to his employment agreement with PSLI. There would be no standing to release a claim for his employment with Tesco, and it specifically refers to his employment agreement with PSLI. The bonus payments were paid under two bonus programs with Tesco and Mr. Hallmark. It had nothing to do with PSLI. Unless there are questions, I think I've used my time. All right, thank you for your time and courtesy.
Mr. Hallmark.
May it please the court. I want to address the last question first. He's talking about the release in the PLSI release agreement. After Mr. Hudgens asserted claims against the officers went to the to PLSI and negotiated a release agreement. That release agreement released any claim by PLSI against the officers. Here's what it says. It releases claims for benefits payments. All payments and benefits which the company has paid to Hallmark under Section 5A of the Employment Agreement or otherwise were fully earned, due, and payable, and have been ratified, approved by the company and the board of directors. There wasn't an overpayment. That's what it's saying. There's an argument that could be made about what the phrase under Section 5A of the Employment Agreement or otherwise means. I've got that for brief. It's fairly complicated, but I think we're satisfied that it does include the claim for overpayment. His argument is this. He says, well, that's an agreement with PLSI. It's not an agreement with Tesco. PLSI is Tesco. There was a merger. The merger agreement merges Tesco into PLSI, and so PLSI owns all the agreements, owns all the obligations and assets of Tesco, and when it makes this claim on behalf of PLSI, it also makes the claim on behalf of Tesco. Now, I think, however, the easier and stronger argument is the claim involving the earlier release to which Mr. Hutchins was party, and it says, let me say this as a preface. PLSI was buying more, when it bought Tesco, it was buying more than bricks and mortars and transformers. It was buying Tesco's book of business, and it was buying his people. It was buying these officers who are very valuable. Many of them aren't college educated. Many of them work their way up through the ranks. That's what happens in the utility business. But these are valuable people, and they want to keep them. And that's why they put a provision in the merger agreement that said the officers weren't going to get sued. It says, no person has any right of recovery against any former, current, future, or future officers for any claim relating to the merger or any other matter of any nature related to the merger. Well, how broad is that? They say that they acquired the claim against the officers by paying the merger consideration. The pot was short. They've had to put in extra money. That's how they got the claim. That seems to me like it is related in some way to the merger. And you can see why PLSI did not want its officers sued. Remember what a merger agreement is. A merger agreement is like the doctrine of merger. It's supposed to end everything. At the end of the day, you've got your agreement, they've got the stock, one side's got the stock, the other side has the money, and nobody gets sued. That was the intent here, and they can't sue PLSI, so they're trying to sue us. They've got problems because it's been released once, but not twice. Let me go back to standing. The problem is that if there was an overpayment, and we're not conceding there was an overpayment, if there was an overpayment, the claim belongs to Tesco and now to PLSI. It doesn't belong to the shareholders. It's basic corporate law. The shareholders aren't liable. They don't own the property of the corporation.
But the shareholders are the ones that are out money. How did they ever get made whole?
They don't get made whole. They made a bad bargain. They certainly couldn't sue PLSI or Tesco. They're hunting for somebody to sue. And we're the only people.
And Mr. Hallmark is one of the people who got the money, so it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, but we got the money from Tesco. We did not get it from them. Now, they say, and they're invoking the law of subrogation. And in subrogation, let's see if I can say this right, because I don't think I quite said it right in my brief. They say that they paid money, they reimbursed Tesco for money that the officers owed, the overpayment. Therefore, they say they stand in the shoes of Tesco and can sue the officers for the overpayment. That's the law of equitable subrogation. The problem is that they never paid, they never actually wrote a check to Tesco. They never said, oh gosh, we found out that you overpaid, here's our check for the overpayment, and now we want the claim against the officers. It came out in the wash when they were settling up accounts, and they said, oh, we've been shorted. Does that create subrogation? Does that give them the right? No, the lead case is Wingate against Hodgin, which by the way is a case, when you go back and read, you might note that involves a sole shareholder. There was one person who was the shareholder, and he tried to assert the claim, and the court said, no, you can't assert it, it belongs to the corporation. And the mere fact that this claim may have affected the price of your stock does not give you standing. That's what they're saying here. That because of the quote overpayment, it affected the price of stock, therefore we have standing. They want you to undermine the law of Wingate against Hodgin. An indirect payment is simply not enough. It's got to be direct. How direct? Well, it's got to be pretty direct because in Wingate there was a sole shareholder and he didn't qualify. Now I want to say two things more about their claim. They're saying that somehow because they're asserting equitable claims, money hadn't received, unjust enrichment, that these rules don't apply. That's not right. And they have some statements in their brief. I probably don't have time to read it to you. They're on pages 27 and 29, where they kind of go out in the weeds and try to make this argument. The standing argument has nothing to do with the type of claim. It doesn't make any difference whether Tesco had a claim against Mr. Hallmark for a breach of contract, for money hadn't received, or for torts. The claim belonged to Tesco, not to the shareholders. Similarly, with regard to the release argument, it doesn't make any difference what kind of claim was involved. The release covered for any claim relating to the merger or any matter related to the merger. Any claim. It doesn't make any difference what kind of claim is involved. Now, in the time remaining, I'd like to talk about our counterclaims for attorney's fees. We did get attorney's fees. I cited to you, and when we got attorney's fees under the Declaratory Judgments Act, and we got attorney's fees under the Declaratory Judgments Act, and there's a lot of ways to attack such an award. You can attack it, you can say, well, the award of attorney fees wasn't authorized by the Declaratory Judgments Act, or we didn't plead a cognizable claim for declaratory relief, or it wasn't reasonable and necessary, or it was excessive, or we didn't segregate. They have not asserted any of these arguments. They've limited their attack on the attorney's fees claim to that they say the award, that there's a requirement the award must be equitable and just. That's the easiest one for us to satisfy. It's reviewed under abuse of discretion standard. And the question is it fair? Well, it's not really clear why they say it's unfair. They say that, yes, we did represent some of the other employees, and obviously, we went to school on all the claims, and if we got a document in one suit, we could probably use the other without discovery. That just reduced our attorney's fees. That's all. We didn't have to spend as much money, but still, we prevail. I submit to you that the test for the attorney's fees being equitable to just is satisfied if the prevailing party gets attorney's fees. Now, I'm not saying that the prevailing party should always get attorney's fees under the Declaratory Judgments Act, but that's not the issue. The only issue is it equitable and just? And I think when the winning side gets lawyer's fees, it is equitable and just. There's a case out of this court that I cited, Cotton against Weatherford Bank Shares, says this: we find no evidence that the award of attorney's fees was inequitable or unjust, and there is some evidence to support it. How much time do I have?
4 minutes and 30 seconds.
Well, I've got more time than I have. I'm not going to use it all. I want to go back and cover one more thing. They've got this indispensable parties argument, and you start looking at the case and the law, and it just you want to put your hair out. It's so convoluted. Basically, once upon a time, there was a doctrine of indispensable parties, and if you were an indispensable party and you weren't there, They can dismiss the suit. It was, quote, jurisdictional. In 1966, they adopted Rule 39A. The rule itself wasn't that very clear. It seemed to have some mandatory language. But consistently, over the years, the Supreme Court has watered down that doctrine in their cases, and we've got a number of them cited in the brief, so that now it is pretty much a question of discretion. It's a prudential question, not a jurisdictional question. That's right out of the Supreme Court. And with regard to that, the court says that it's a rare case indeed where there's an indispensable party. And I couldn't find a case where the person had been tossed out, case had been tossed out for lack of indispensable party in the modern era, which I define as since 1966. There's some good reasons here why, prudential reasons, why we shouldn't be tossed on that basis. First of all,
well, doesn't the rule just simply say that if you don't join a necessary party, that they're not bound by the judgment?
Well,
so Herb would not be bound by this judgment.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why it's not why he's not indispensable. That's the first thing. And then secondly, they could have brought him in. If they felt he was indispensable, they could have filed a third party action against him, but they didn't. I think in the end of the day, even though the law and briefing is somewhat convoluted, the answer is easy. It was a prudential decision. The trial court made it. We're not going to disturb it. I believe that's all I have. If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
If I could, let's talk about the release a little bit. PLSI never, ever had a claim for this. We would have never, ever, the shareholders, Tesco, never, ever had a claim against PLSI. They're not complete strangers to this because you've got the whole domino effect. But legally, they really are. Because like you said, the bonus programs were entered into between Tesco and the executives. Any overpayment that was made by Tesco. And then right along with the merger, and we find out that there are overpayments because of the audit. Now, it wasn't, the merger didn't give rise to the cause of action. The merger revealed the cause of action because of the audit. But
the disconnect for me is if the merger didn't give rise to the cause of action, it just revealed it, then how does Mr. Hudgens designation as the stockholders' representative in the merger agreement do anything? Well, how does it give him standing if the cause of action isn't even related to the merger agreement?
Well, it gives him standing because the shareholders paid Tesco's debt. We could have had a number of circumstances instead of a merger. There could have been a purchase and acquisition or some hostile takeover. I mean, a number of things that could have led to this. The question is, who has standing to bring that claim? At the end of the
day, doesn't the case law say to use equitable subrogation to give you standing that the shareholders had to make the overpayment to Mr. Hallmark, not that they made an overpayment as a consequence of the merger, but they actually had to make the overpayment? Do you have any authority that they don't have to make that overpayment to use equitable subrogation?
Yes, Your Honor, and I can't cite it standing right here. It's in our brief. I don't believe that the shareholders had to write the check. What gives them equitable subrogation is that the shareholders made the payment. They make the payment to Tesco. It is, they're paying Tesco's debt. Tesco, because
they did so knowingly. They knew what they were doing. This is an equitable principle. So they did it with full knowledge that they were doing it. And that's what brings me back to why didn't they have a big King's X there? Because they could have said, look, you're acquiring, you are, if your employees were overpaid, you could go after the employees for the overpayment.
Right.
But we're merging and we're taking our payment, we're going home. And so you're actually getting more because you're getting whatever it was negotiated plus that overpayment, which is an account receivable. And why not at the time of audit, weren't those adjustments made?
because we wouldn't have had the contractual right to do that. Once the merger agreement was signed, we've got to go forward with that merger. There's nothing in the merger agreement that would have allowed the shareholders to cancel the agreement if it turned out Tesco had overpaid the employees. If PLSI could look at the shareholders and say, that sounds like a problem, but it ain't our problem. Under this agreement, you promised to provide us with a company that had certain things, financial things, its capital account being one of them. And if it ain't there...
You promised to deliver us a company that has X amount of worth. And part of that worth is the accounts receivables for being able to sue your clients, sue your officers for overpayment.
Well, under the way if you look at the merger agreement, under the way they defined that capital target, an accounts receivable against employees wouldn't have counted. We couldn't have said, boy, I know we said that it would have $30 million in capital, and we're about $1 million short here, but we've got this $1 million receivable. That wouldn't have counted. The way they defined that working capital, it had to be $30 million. And in this case, if it was, my numbers are wrong, they're exaggerations. If instead of $30 million, there was $29 million.
It just seems to me that at the time of accounting, that this should have been worked out. Everybody's eyes were open to the problem. Everybody knew about it. It's an equitable principle. And if you close your eyes to it and go forward, then you can't seek equity for something you knowingly did. And you negotiated, and it was a business deal.
Well, and
how do
I
you
guess
do
I
that?
Just disagree with you, and with respect. At that point, the people at the table, we couldn't have said to PLSI, King's X, we've got to go fix this. We were required to go forward. And in order to go forward, we had to write a check to bring an accounting to balance, to pay, make Tesco whole. And we now have the right through subrogation to recover the debt for Tesco that we paid. But we couldn't have said to PLSI, King's X, we've got this unrelated action, we've got to go bring and clean up. That, our obligation was to provide a company with clean financials. And if we tried to do anything else, we're in breach of our agreement with PLSI.
So maybe Mr. Gilstrap's right that you just made a bad deal when you entered into that merger agreement and didn't make a provision for some sort of clawback agreement or some agreement to get that money back if in fact it was overpaid.
With 20/20 hindsight, you can always write a better contract, but the law doesn't require that. If we have paid a debt, in this case it was involuntarily, if I paid a debt, Texas law is clear under equitable subrogation principles. If I paid somebody else's debt, I get to step into the shoes to get made whole. And in this case, we paid Tesco's debt, and we can now seek redress for that. I mean, otherwise, there would be no doctrine of equitable subrogation if you can't recover for payments of other people's debts. That's the only reason the doctrine exists.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
In the summary judgment that was granted by the trial court,
the first or second?
The final one with the check marks. I guess my question is, it seems like, I guess I'm asking, what summary judgment evidence exists that there was an overpayment?
Well, that will be. Mr. Hudgens' affidavit is the principal evidence of overpayment.
Okay, because the formulas are not set forth in the ACIP or the COSIP agreements.
Right, I believe it's going to be Mr. Hudgens' affidavit that sets forth the payments that were made and how much of that was overpayment.
Any other questions?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your argument today and for your briefing. It's been very helpful to us in this complicated case. We appreciate you traveling here from Midland. We also appreciate you agreeing to conduct arguments here at Texas A&M University School of Law. You are free to go about your business. We have one other case, and then we will take questions. Thank you so much.